Good evening. It's good to be back with you tonight. Good to have those of you that are visiting. Hope you can be back with us again soon. Those of you that know me know that I'm looking for a job, not to replace my job here at Elliottsville, but not from my other job that I don't have anymore. And doing that has been interesting. I'm looking for a job and applying for jobs has been interesting because it's been a long time since I've done that. Things have changed a lot. And some of the things that larger companies require is for you to apply online. And they want you to upload your resume, you know, through their website. But not only do they want you to upload the resume, you have to type in everything that's on your resume anyway. And one particular place that I applied had a test. I felt like I was in school again. And the first part of it was a breeze. I thought, this is so easy because it gave you hypothetical situations. You know, if you were a manager and employees were arguing about this or that, you know, of the four solutions here, which one is the best and which one is the worst? And that, I thought, this is a cinch because it was obvious to me, you know, which one would be the best solution, which one would be absolutely the worst. But then it got into math and the whole thing, and math word questions, you know, and I just started guessing at that. I thought maybe the 80% of the test that I did good on will cancel out this part that's going to be very poor. But when you want to hire somebody for a job, you know, there are different skill sets that people look for. One of the particular things that's been easy on filling out applications is, have you ever been fired for stealing from your employer? I can say no, that's never happened to me. Have you ever been arrested for this and that? Have you ever been terminated because you were consistently late or you had a habitual problem with tardiness, or you didn't show up to work without, you know, calling somebody and telling them that you weren't going to be there? Well, no. You know, I haven't done those things. So, you know, when you need somebody for a job, you want someone that's going to be dependable. It's not just important to have someone with the skills to do the job. You want some other things. If you had several candidates, you know, with equivalent skills, you know, what would move one person above another? Well, character would make a difference. And that's one of the things that people try to discover about you when you're filling out an application. Of course, you could lie about all those things. You know, if you didn't have character, you could tell them that, no, you'd never been fired or disciplined for any of those reasons. But if they started checking references or did a background check, they may find out some things about you that you did not reveal to them. You know, if you were in the position to hire somebody, you certainly wouldn't want to hire somebody that was a compulsive liar or somebody that had a reputation of not showing up for work because they were drunk and or a drug user or a thief or somebody who's just lazy. Just recently, I remember it was Jarell and I've been watching I Love Lucy some, and I started looking up some of the history of the actors on the show. And William Farley, who played Fred, was picked to, he really wanted to be on that show, and he contacted Lucille Ball about being on that, but CBS did not want him to be on the show because he had a reputation of being a drunk. And one of the stipulations that Lucy and Ricky had on him was that if you ever do not come to work, you know, without a good reason for not being here, or if you ever show up here drunk, then you're off the show. And he never that never happened. As long as he was on the show, he never missed. He was always the first to know his lines, and so, you know, he had that reputation, and that was a concern for the television network. I thought that was very interesting, and very interesting also that because he was warned and hired under those conditions, that 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 never happened. So an employer wants somebody that is going to be reliable. If you're picking a doctor or you're picking a mechanic or somebody that you are voting for in an office in government, you want somebody that has character. And the concept of character is found in several different biblical words that we want to look at this evening. In Romans chapter 5, verses 1 through 5, the principle of character is mentioned. Having been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have access and faith into this grace by which we stand and rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. And not only that, but we also glory in tribulations, knowing that tribulation produces perseverance, and perseverance, character, and character, hope. And so the things that we experience, the things that we go through as Christians, they produce character in us. There are some things that, you know, when I was fresh out of college and had a sales job, and the sales job was very difficult for me. When I was selling newspaper advertising, I liked laying out the ads and creating them and doing the production part of it, but I didn't particularly like going out and visiting the clients and trying to sell to them. I liked the creative part, but if dealing with customers that were already, you know, clients of the newspaper, they were already sold on using advertising. All I had to do was service the client. Well, you know, trying to sell something to somebody that doesn't want to buy something, that was difficult. And if they told me no, I just wanted to go cry for a half an hour. Wasn't that particularly good at that. But talking to somebody else, just in the past few days about sales, I think I could do it now much better because there's things about me that have changed. My confidence level is different. And if I'm selling something that I have a great deal of knowledge about, you know, it would be totally different than the way that I felt at that time in the past. My character has changed. My abilities have changed. The concept of character in the Bible is found in several different words. The first one that I want to look at is not on my screen, but it's the Greek word arete, and it means moral excellence. It is a word that means the things that are worthy to be praised. And we want to have that kind of moral excellence in our life. As a matter of fact, one of the Greek societies down at Florida College is called Arete. And no doubt whoever picked that, wanted to emphasize that because it means moral excellence. It refers to things worthy to be praised. In 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3, 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 3 says, "And His divine power has given to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us by glory and by virtue." The word arte means excellence. It means virtue. And God has called us by His glory and virtue. What does that do for us? Well, when we use God's word to imitate Christ, we are to put on Christ. We're to put on those same attributes that He had that are admirable. In 2 Peter 1, reading on in verses 4 and 5, it says, By which have been given to us exceedingly great and precious promises, that through these you may be partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world through lust, but also for this very reason, given all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge." So virtue and excellence leads us in imitating Christ. And certainly that's the tall order for us to imitate Him. But that's exactly what we are to do as Christians, is to desire to imitate Christ and be like Him. And that's something that we'll spend our life trying to do. Also, the concept of integrity. And when I was working on this lesson yesterday, I could pronounce this. Right now I can't. Adia Fatoria.
And that's what I'm going to say. And whether that's right or not, I don't know. But it means unable to be corrupted. It's a word that means to be morally complete. And, you know, as I said, looking at the job market and what people are looking for, they're looking for people that are morally complete, that will make good decisions, not just people that have a skill set, but somebody that they can trust to be dependable and do a good job. And certainly that's an attribute that every Christian ought to have. Somebody that is a Christian ought to be an excellent employer or an excellent employee because of the moral integrity that they should have. They should be upright. They should have innocence in the way that they handle situations. It shouldn't be a struggle for a Christian to determine whether or not they're going to be honest on the job. You know, that should be something that should, I won't say second nature, it should be first nature. It should be an attribute that we have. Its integrity also is acquainted with the word innocence. Let's look at Psalm 26. Psalm 26 in verse 1. The psalmist says, "Vindicate me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity. I have trusted in the Lord. I shall not slip." So David here says that he walked in his integrity. And because he walked in his integrity, he shouldn't slip. He shouldn't fail. And that's the kind of attribute that a Christian ought to have. Another word that we see is the word that is translated proven character, dokime. It's tested trustworthiness. And it comes from, you know, Romans chapter 5 that Jason read for us tonight, talking about the things that we add to ourselves. Tribulation producing perseverance, and perseverance character, and character hope. It is this word that means tested trustworthiness. This is talking about our reputation. Our reputation is very important. And I'm using a lot of illustrations tonight about my job search, and it is kind of interesting to me because I'm so new to doing this, but one of the ways that people get recommendations today is on LinkedIn, and maybe some of you are familiar with LinkedIn. It's an online service, and one particular company that I applied for a job with wanted me to link to my LinkedIn profile instead of sending a resume because they said that they can learn more about you from what others say about you than what you say about yourself. Well, LinkedIn is a service where people that know you, that have worked with you, they can recommend you and they can endorse you for certain types of skills. And there's some safeguards on that system so people don't abuse it. You know, you actually have to know the people that you're linking to, and they have to confirm that they know you, and you have to put in how you know them and through what company. So there is some testing and some degree of trust that people have in that service. And so one of the first things that I did when I got back in the job market was contact people that I knew had a good reputation and were well respected in the industry and ask them if they wouldn't mind saying something about me on my LinkedIn. And, you know, it was interesting what people, I told them, if just like your mother said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. You know, if you're going to say something about me, I want you to be good. I don't want you to get on there and say something bad. But, you know, the things that people have said have been very kind. And so they have helped me to build my reputation that I will take, you know, to another employer or a potential employer. But, you know, your reputation can sometimes be not true. You know, there have been coaches that have put on their resume that they had degrees from certain schools and they didn't, and there have been people that have put all kinds of different lies on their resumes that ended up not being true. And, you know, people may catch you and they may not catch you in that kind of thing. So there's been a quote that's been around for a long time that says your reputation is what people think you are, your character is what God knows you are. you might be able to get people to say something nice about you. You may even have a good reputation among people because you have been excellent at putting up a good front and fooling a lot of people. But your reputation, while it is important and certainly does come into play in this world today, our character is what God knows we are. Carl Bismarck said, "Character is what we do when we think no one else is looking." And you know, there are people that, when they are alone in their car and cut off in traffic or whatever, there are things that will fly out of their mouth that they would never say in front of somebody else because their character is different, or their demeanor is different when they're by themselves. And their demeanor and their language and the things that they do may be different just based on the peer group that they're with at the time. But character is what God sees. He knows what we are all the time. And while people may behave differently in different circumstances, we need to be the type of people that it doesn't matter who we're around. It doesn't matter if we're alone. That we always realize that God sees us and that our character is something that is solid and virtuous and has integrity, as we pointed out. Well, how do we develop that? Well, it's something that starts from within. Our character certainly is something that is in our heart. Charles Reeder made the statement that you sow a thought and you reap an act. Sow an act and you reap a habit. Sow a habit and you reap a character. Sow a character and you reap a destiny. What that means is that what you are and what you become, it all starts with your thoughts. And that's exactly Jesus' point in Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 14, when he talks about our heart. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 7 and start in verse 14 and go through verse 23. Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 14. Yeah, I'm sorry, it's Mark. I just was looking at Matthew, and it was beginning in an odd place and with an odd thought that had nothing to do with the lesson. But it started with an M. Mark chapter 7, verse 14. "And he called the people to him again and said to them, 'Hear me, all of you, and understand, there is nothing outside a person that by going into him can defile him. But the things that come out of a person are what defile him. And when he has entered the house and left the people, his disciples asked him about the parable. And he said to them, Then you are also without understanding. Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile him, since it enters not his heart, but his stomach, and is expelled? Therefore he declared all foods clean. And he said, What comes out of a person is what defiles him. For from within, out of the heart of man, comes evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, deceit, sensuality, envy, slander, pride, foolishness. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person." The things, and I think Rex pointed this out in class today, that the sin that's in our life, you know, it starts somewhere. It starts in the heart. You know, somebody doesn't just wake up and say, "Oh, I'm going to commit murder today." You know, there's a reason they're thinking about that. It's because, you know, they're covetous, or there's some reason that they despise this person, or there's something that this is going to do for them. Jesus says that the things that people do in regard to sin, it all starts in the heart. It starts with what you think. And we need to control our heart. We need to control what goes into our mind so that we can keep our minds pure. In Philippians chapter 4, in verse 8, Paul tells us that we need to control what we think about. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. Meditation, studying God's Word, being around other Christians, these are things that will help us in our life to concentrate on the things that will affect our heart. And that's why Paul tells us to think on these things. How we think influences our behavior. In Proverbs chapter 3, starting in verse 23, the wise writer says, "Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life." Several years ago, this passage was the theme of our Bible classes at summer camp. And we talked all week about our heart and the things that we needed to do to protect our heart. He goes on and says, "Put away from you a deceitful mouth and put perverse lips far from you. Let your eyes look straight ahead and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or the left. Remove your foot from evil." And so you can see the theme of this passage here is to guard your heart, guard your lips. Don't let your eyes, look at things that they shouldn't look at. Ponder your feet and the path of your feet, where you go, the people that you're around. Don't turn to the right or to the left. All these things have to do with our core values. All these things have to do with the way that we're going to be successful against fighting the evil influences in our world. And this is something that Satan understands all too well. You can be watching something on television and it'd be a perfectly good show, but there's a commercial that comes on that you would just rather not be seen in your house. I don't know how many of you were at my father's funeral. I know some of you were, but one of the things that one of the preachers that worked with my dad said that there was a Victoria's Secret catalog that came in the mail. You remember talking about that? The Victoria's Secret catalog came in the mail, and my dad got that. And he said, "How did this get into our house?" And he was looking at this preacher, and he was saying, "I didn't subscribe to that. I didn't ask for that to be sent." But my dad wrote them a letter and said, "I don't ever want this to be in my mailbox ever again." And he realized that was something that he didn't want to look at and didn't want anybody else that was in the house to look at. But today, people might look at that reaction and think, "Well, that's so old school. We see things in the newspaper and in the inserts in the paper that are that bad." But when it's not accidental that movies have just that obligatory set scene or the cursing. And music videos today aren't as popular as they were when I was a little bit younger, but the music videos always featured people that were dressed inappropriately. That's not an accident. Why do so many people that are supposed intellectuals become upset about prayers and mentions of God in schools? There are people that want to mold your behavior. There's people that want to mold the way that you think. And there's people that want to mold your behavior in a good way and protect you from seeing certain things. And, children today, many times when you try to say, "Well, we're not going to watch that," or "We're not going to go to this place," or "We're not going to do this." Well, I see and hear worse than this at school is the answer. But it doesn't have to come into our house, and we don't have to be accepting of it just because we can't control our environment everywhere that we go, but we can control what we can control and try to. That's exactly what we read in the Proverbs: to shield your eyes. Don't let your feet go to these places that are evil. It's important for us to think about things that are pure. Philippians chapter 2, verse 5 says, "Let this mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus." Think on proper things. That's because all these things that people get involved with, they start in the heart. We need to set our mind and our affections on things that are above. In Colossians chapter 3, 1 through 4, Paul says, "If then you are raised with Christ, seek those things which are from above, where Christ is sitting at the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above and not on things on the earth. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, appears, then you also will appear with Him in glory." One of the things that I like that Keith Stonehart has done on his Facebook page is he's got a he writes every once in a while, and it says Keith Stonehart is dead. Well, it gets people's attention to know what he's saying. And what he's saying is exactly what we read here in Colossians, that you've died, you have changed, you know, you're not involved in these things anymore. You shouldn't be, because your heart is seeking something different. Your mind is to be set on things above. And we need to understand what molds our behavior and what influences the way that we think. It's very important that we set our minds and our affections on things above. The thing that's difficult for us sometimes is to be consistent in the application of these things. A person who lies sometimes, but not all the time, do they have an honest character? If somebody lies, but they believe that lying is wrong, you know, there's some inconsistency there, isn't there? Most people would say that lying is wrong. I believe that most people, that if you ask them, is lying right or wrong, they would say that it's wrong. But when you ask them, do you lie, it might be a different story. And they may lie to you about that and say that they don't lie. But a person who lies sometimes really doesn't have an honest character, even if he does believe that it's wrong. Character results from habits. Our character is a habitual thing, and it results from the things that are in our heart. After Paul speaks about the things in Philippians chapter 4 that he says that we should meditate on, he doesn't just tell them to meditate and to think about those things. He tells them that they need to put those things that they meditated on in practice. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 9, "The things which you have learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you." You can't just read things. You just can't know what's right. It's something that Paul says, all these things that I've taught you, you need to put them into practice in your life. It's not just knowing the right thing to do. It's doing those things as well. James chapter 1, verse 25 says, "The one who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it and is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in what he does." James also describes the people that don't do what they know that they need to do as one who looks in the mirror. And they don't do anything about what they see. And, you know, sometimes I've looked that way when I, you know, get up in the morning and I realize that I've never had on two different shoes, but I've seen people that have had mismatched shoes on before, that they've got one pair of shoes on. So I've got one shoe on their right foot, one shoe on their left foot, one's black and one's blue. I have accidentally worn the wrong color of socks many times, and very glad that people cannot see. And sometimes I'll wear socks that are the same color because I can't find two that really match, but at least they're both black. Now you're going to be looking to see what it is that I'm wearing. But you know, you can't see my socks, so it's not that big of a deal. But if I get up and my hair's all messed up and I haven't shaved, and I look in the mirror and say, "Well, you know, I'm just going to go out like this today," you know, that's not the way that most people would behave. Sometimes you do see that. People will ask you, you know, "Did your mom forget to dress you today?" If you look like you just rolled out of bed. But spiritually, James is saying that, you know, people shouldn't behave in this way.
when they look in the mirror, when they look into the perfect law of liberty, and they see that, you know, I'm a liar, I'm a thief, I'm covetous, I'm doing these things that I ought not to do, but I'm not going to change. I'm not going to do anything about that. You know, that's a problem with application. That's not a problem with knowledge. This person knows what they ought to do. And I believe that most of us don't have as much of a problem with knowledge as we do with application. We know better to do than what we do. You know, for example, I have a habit of coming here. I have a habit of coming here to church. You may say, well, it's because you're the preacher, but you know, we all should have that habit, but it should be more than that. It's something that we habitually do. Habits are things that sometimes you can do without giving it much thought. You know, I don't have to decide each Sunday, well, am I going to go to services today? And although I have a responsibility to be here as the person that's preaching, it shouldn't be a decision for anybody here. You shouldn't have to decide when you wake up on Sunday morning, well, I wonder if I'm going to go to services, or on Wednesday night, or whenever it is that we meet together. Habits are things that you can do without giving it much thought, and it should be a habit that we come together. It's a good tradition, as Keith was talking about last week. The decision for us to come together, it should have been made for you a long time ago, you know, when you were baptized into Christ and determined that I'm going to do what it is that Christians have a responsibility to do. And of course, our dedication to that, you know, should improve over time instead of becoming weaker. In fact, you know, many of us and many of you know that if you're going to be traveling, you look up where congregations are you know, during your travels. There's good websites now. It used to be that everybody looked in that church directory, but now most of the time people probably just Google you know, where churches are in that area, or go to findthechurch.com or something, because you know, this habit of coming together is something that doesn't end when we travel. We look for places that we can go and be encouraged by other brethren and fulfill that responsibility that we have to worship. Unfortunately, some have formed different habits. Others have formed the habit of not coming together and have formed the habit of being very, very sporadic and unreliable in their attendance, or very unreliable in their punctuality in their attendance. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24 says, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much more as you see the day approaching. We ought to be taking this time that we have together seriously, and understanding that it's something that we should look forward to, not something that we should dread. It should be something that we look forward to coming together and being together as Christians. And these habits that we have, they form our character. Character is something that is important. Again, going back to talking about, you know, applying for a job. You know, one of the worst things that you can do as an employee is to be habitually late. You know, that I have, you know, I know somebody in my family, I won't mention who they are, but they have been fired from many jobs because they have been habitually late to every job that they've ever had. And they have been fired over and over and over for the same reason. And I had an interview last week, and you know, I feel like one of the worst things that you could do for your first interview is to be late for it when you have an appointment. Well, you know, there was an accident on I-65 that closed two lanes. I left way ahead of time to go to this interview so I wouldn't be late. But, you know, that was something that I couldn't help. But I did have the email of the person that I was interviewing with, and so I texted them from, you know, from the interstate and told them that they were fine with that. They knew that happened. So that certainly was not the way that I wanted this to start off. I did not want to start off this process by arriving late. And thankfully, they were very understanding about that. And they travel from Alabaster to downtown themselves and understand that that's something that happens. But, you know, we need to be consistent in our application, what we know to do, and certainly that our habit of coming together should be something that we don't even have to think about. Whether or not I'm going to be here, whether or not I'm going to be on time for services is not something that I have to wake up and make a decision about. It should be something that's consistent. Another thing that we need to consider when we talk about our convictions and our character is that sometimes we have to sacrifice for our convictions. Paul speaks about what it is that he had to endure in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 23. Paul talks about many things that he had to go through. We won't take the time to read all this passage. We've read it many times before, but he talks about how many times he was beaten. He talks about the things that he had to endure, that he had to be in prison. He was stoned. He was shipwrecked. He was in different kinds of perils. He was in perils of weather and perils of brethren, treating him poorly. But he says, besides all these other things, that are very negative and could cause him, if he were weaker, to fall away, he says the thing that concerned him most was not all these things that were negative that had happened to him, but his concern for all the churches. He said, who is weak and I am not weak? Who is made to stumble and I do not burn with indignation? If I must boast, I will boast in the things which concern my infirmity. Paul had been through many things that he had endured, but he was willing to sacrifice for his convictions. And, why did he do that? Why didn't he just give up? Well, he knew that something was at stake. He did not want to be disqualified. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he tells us, therefore, do not lose heart. Our outward man is perishing, but the inward man is being renewed day by day. And you can certainly see, as Paul was getting on in years and the things that were happening to him, he could see that his outward man was perishing. And he was not going to be able to keep having the kind of abuse that he was enduring forever, but he didn't give up because he knew that something better was at hand. He knew that there was value in his beliefs, there was value in having the kind of character that he had, there was value in suffering. And Paul gave up a lot to be a Christian. But everything that he gave up was worth it. He said in Philippians chapter 3, I suffered the loss of all things. And he's talking about his past life and the things that he had as he was a very prominent Jew. But he said he gave all that up so that he could gain Christ. In Philippians chapter 3, verse 10, he says, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death, if by any means I attain to the resurrection from the dead. So suffering for his convictions is something that was not a big decision that Paul had to make. He was more than happy to do that. So we have to sacrifice for our convictions. One other quote that I'd like to leave with you tonight is by Peggy Noonan. She says, you can't buy courage and decency. You can't rent a strong moral sense. I believe that's very well said. Courage and decency and having strong convictions and having character is something that you either have or you don't. God knows if you are a person of character. Several years ago, my mother gave me a cassette tape, and it was a speech made by a man named Guy Dowd. And I don't know if any of you are familiar with that name, but you're probably familiar with the name of James Dobson and the Focus on the Family show. Well, this was a person that had been on James Dobson's radio program, and Guy Dowd was an elementary school teacher, and somehow he had won a Teacher of the Year award and was able to give a speech about that. And it was very interesting and very inspirational to hear you know, this man talk. And of course, a lot of the emphasis was about being a mentor to young people and the things that you can do to help them. And he talked about some things in his life. At the time that he was speaking, he was married, but when he was younger, he was very much overweight and had a lot of problems because of his weight. But he lost a lot of that weight. But he relates to the struggles that he had, and he said when he was younger and wanted to date this girl, you know, she told him, you know, you'd be kind of cute if you lost weight. And he said, kind of cute? You know, why bother? You know, he wanted to be cute. He just didn't want to be kind of cute. So he said he went home and ate a gallon of Butterbrickel ice cream after she said that. But you know, he talks about the emphasis that people put on outward appearance. And of course, he did something about his outward appearance and lost weight. But you know, so many people today put so much emphasis on outward appearance. We have just recently started watching the show Duck Dynasty that some of you have probably seen. And, you know, Jarrell just does not want to be married to a man with a scraggly beard. And she does not want me to grow a big, long beard like that one of the guys on there has. And it's two different lengths, you know, on both sides, and it's two different colors. And she was looking at the wives on that show, and she said, those wives look so normal, and these guys look so not normal. She didn't say it that way, but they showed some photos of what these men looked like before they grew these long beards and became kind of the mountain men that they are now. Well, they look very clean cut. But you know, I was thinking about that, and thinking about these wives that seem, you know, so satisfied with their home life, and you know, even though the appearance of their husbands is so much different, you know, they, like many of us, there was a time that we used to be thinner, and these guys used to be thinner. And they used to have dark hair instead of gray hair. And they didn't have the mountain man look that they have now. Yet these wives see something in them that maybe the person on the outside may not see. They might see characters. They know this person. They've been with them a long time. They know what makes them tick. In other words, you know, they love them because they know who they are. And sometimes when we are judging people from the outside, we might see a couple and say, well, I don't know what he ever saw in her. I don't know what she ever saw in him, because all we can see is the exterior. Young people, what are you looking for? Who are you looking to marry? Do you want somebody that's rich? Do you want somebody that's popular? Do you want somebody that's beautiful or handsome? I think I've told you before that Ethan's looked at old pictures of me and said, Dad, you used to look good. Well, I looked good just long enough to catch your mom, you know. But what are you looking for? Do you want somebody that's rich and handsome and good looking? But that doesn't always stay that way. Just look at Buck Dynasty. Look at the way those guys change. They're not handsome forever. And women are not always beautiful forever. But if they have character, then they do have an inward beauty that means much more than outward beauty. Beauty fades. Fame is something that comes and goes. Wealth certainly comes and goes. But character is something that endures. In fact, the Proverbs say this. And it says it in very language that's very easy to understand. In Proverbs 11, chapter 22, as a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion. That's saying that a woman who is not pure, a woman who does not have the kind of character that she ought to have, you know, she's like a ring, she's a waste. She's like a ring of gold in a swine's snout. Proverbs chapter 31, verse 10 says, who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. Also in the same chapter, in verse 30, says, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. Yes, we all want to look good. We all want to have the boyfriend or the girlfriend that's beautiful or handsome. But we need to learn something from the wise writer here and consider that character is something that is so important. And that's what young people need to look for when they marry. And, you know, a lot of us are fortunate when we can have it all. We can have the person that we're attracted to, and we can have the person that has character. But, you know, if you're just looking for beauty and not paying attention to character, you're in for a world of hurt unless that person develops some character. You know, people that are handsome and beautiful, you know, they're out there, but the person that has the character to go along with it, has the attributes that we've been talking about tonight, those are the ones that are worth considering. That's the kind of person that we need to be. We need to be people of conviction and people that straddle the fence and are wishy-washy. You know, you can find those anywhere. People that are not committed to anything or anyone, and especially not committed to God, you can find that anywhere. But to find the person that is a man or woman of character, we need to be that. And young people, I want you to be encouraged to look for that in the people that you're around as your friends, and especially in the ones that you date or consider to marry. Let's all be people of conviction. Let's not just work to have a good reputation, but let's work to have a good reputation with God, because God knows what we truly are and knows if we're men and women of character. Hope these things will be useful to you. If you're not a Christian tonight and are desirous of becoming one, or if you started that life and haven't been faithful, we can help you get back in that right relationship. We invite you to come while we stand and sing.